Order. Paul?
Information meeting.
Mr. Chair, we're working through our overview on the main subjects, main revenue subjects. Just a reminder that we do have a joint meeting scheduled tomorrow in this room with House Energy and Environment. And I think Robin has sent around. I got the list of public testimony. It looks pretty extensive. That will be on the biofuels bill. So that'll be your meeting for tomorrow. And then Thursday we have a meeting with the Senate at 8:30 on business taxation, and then a follow-up meeting at 1, which should pretty much wrap up our orientation. So we'll start scheduling bills. And Chair and I are working on a schedule for next week, and we'll have our first public hearings on Monday.
Very good. Amazing.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mazen Malik, Legislative Revenue Office. And we're talking about excise taxes today. And I have to, at the beginning, apologize at the outset. I didn't find appropriate sound effects for this presentation.
And the committee was so looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the sound of juggling beer.
Not sucking on a cigarette.
Well, I tried something different, so let's see. Excise taxes, we will talk about tobacco taxes, alcoholic beverages, telecommunications. That's a telecommunications side. Fuel and rate mile and final transit margin tax. These are what we define in general as the excise taxes in Oregon. And to start with tobacco and tobacco revenues, we talk about three main products: cigarettes, other tobacco products, and again, finally, the master settlement agreement that had become part of tobacco revenue in the last few years. Well, cigarette tax rates, the first time the Oregon legislature imposed excise tax on cigarettes were 4 cents per pack, effective July 1st, 1966. And at that time, it was distributed to counties to reduce property taxes about 50%. Cities and counties got 25% each. So the idea of reducing property tax by other taxes been around for a long time. Then the legislature increased the permanent rate from 9 cents in 71 to 27 cents in 85, 28 cents in 89. Then came ballot measure 44 in 1996, and it increased the permanent rate to 58 cents. And again in 2002, measure 20 bumped up the permanent rate 60 more cents, and that brought the permanent rate to, at that time, $1.18. However, it was actually at that time $1.28. But the 10 cents within that $1.28 was a temporary rate that used to be renewed every session since 1993. And then at the actually it started back in 1981 with 7 cents, but it continued that time in 93, it became 10 cents. Measure 30, as you remember, out of the 2003 session, the Measure 30 was the revenue package that was attached to the 10 cents temporary tax on tobacco. And with the voting down of Measure 30, that 10 cents went down. So actually, in Oregon, they always, when they call us and ask about tax rates, they get really surprised. Do you reduce tax rates on cigarettes by 10 cents? So yes, we did. Not necessarily that we chose to, but it happened. So the tax rates, if you look back and compare Oregon to the rest of the nation, we would find Oregon to be $1.18 at the 16th. That's one being at way at the top, Rhode Island and New Jersey, those are the highest. Oregon used to be number 21 when we did this presentation last session. So we went down a bit. Now, if you put both sales and excise taxes, as you know, most of the states have both types. Oregon only has one. We would be looking at a different picture. Oregon would decline in ranking back to number 20. So that's as far as the rate would go. And then if you look at the 0506 revenue and how much it is, and it's $222 million in 506, and this is an interesting thing. It's not 666, it's 222. So you can't accuse it of being evil yet. A third of an evil. But, you know, that's what they talk about tobacco. Health plan gets the lion's share out of cigarette taxes, and at 68%, general fund 24%, and the tobacco, I'm blanking on this, tobacco reduction account,
tobacco use reduction.
Use reduction account, yes. I'm glad.
Yeah. Representative Butler, has the acronym stamp.
I had to pay for that acronym one time.
Yes, that is at 3%, and then our local being both cities, counties, and the senior and elderly transportation. They all have different proportions, or the same proportion, but different from others. Now, tax rate. As if you look at the cigarette tax rate in the statutes, you will not find the $1.18 that I've told you about. What you would find it is in two segments. The first segment talks about the 58 cents permanent rate, and that's in 323.030 and 455. And actually, you will not see a 58 cents. What you would see is 25 mils. Per cigarette. In the statutes, we still deal with mils. Mil being a tenth of a penny. I don't have any mils in my pocket. I don't know if anybody. But that's a unit that we use the taxation for. And you would see the mils come in different places when it comes to measuring taxes and small units like that. So the first 58 cents, they're divided as 37 or about almost 38% to the general fund. And as you see, 46, 5, and 10 to locals. And the way these are different from the 60 cents occurred because of the historically put together. The statutes have the 58 cents measure, excuse me, measure for 30, measure 20 in 2002 came and put the 60 cents and it split it differently, so it had to be left in the statutes accordingly. That does not mean we cannot change that and fix it to be more coherent, and that could be one thing that might be beneficial to look at.
If I may, then, of course, at the time, the local governments were very unhappy that we were changing the formula.
That's true, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and of course, we were broke, and so we took money from many different places, and that's an example. Representative Berger.
Never mind. It says those are all in percents. Then my question is, Mazin, those at 37.931 is in percent?
Yes.
Okay.
And out of the 60 cents, that actually was not a local portion in the statue or the measure itself, but because the funny way that tobacco taxes work is when you raise all the taxes, consumption actually falls down because price goes up. So what happens is the old segments that used to get all the amounts start losing a little bit. So that's why we lost, or the locals lost out of the toll, if you will, when we raised the 60 cents. So that $1.40 was to compensate them for that loss. And if you add them all together at the end, that's what you end up with out of the $1.18. If you just want to look at what the $10 that elapsed with Measure 30 used to be, it all was dedicated to the health plan. And that changed the percentages because of the toll, how it changes. I hope you're enjoying this so far. The cigarette tax revenue forecast, as you would see, in 2005-07, this is the biennium we're at. These are the different impacts that happened. Measure 20, 2002. Interesting thing with the Measure 30, 2004, this is the 10 cents reduction that we talk about. We don't really see an impact on revenue. I mean, there is, if you see that leveling off, but there was no reduction. In the sense that is noticeable, but you will see later that this has went against the secular trend of losing revenue all the time, which means in essence with the reduction of 10 cents you actually in actuality gained a little bit. The forecast for 07-09 at $468 million and 2009-11 at 472. These are the first times, by the way, or the first bienniums of forecast where you would see cigarette tax increasing. It has been either flat or declining for a very long time, and we will talk. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here's a sound effect. Well, this
one matched. Mr. Chair. Question.
Sir. Yes, sir.
Why, what you've just shared, Masson, with that the history kind of indicates that it's been a decline, why all of a sudden now an incline, I mean an increase?
We will talk more details in the coming slides, but primarily, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, this is an impact from, or an effect, or a filtering effect from our neighbors to the north. Washington State have increased the tobacco tax drastically, and also restricted smoking in many places. So what happened is you had some sort of migration, in quotes, if you will, of smokers, or smoking business. I have a chance to do this one more time. Okay, PAX per capita, and this probably starts answering the question. If you look back in, this is 1967-71. This is the time where you had the highest level of smoking nationally. The blue line is the United States average, and this is Oregon up here, and this is Washington. It has always been the case where the Oregon business, tobacco business, has been greater than Washington. Or at least, let's put it this way, the tax collection in Oregon has been a higher number per capita than Washington. And I think most of that happens because of the compacts and the different businesses
that are being done by the Native American tribes that are able to take a lot bigger chunk of the Washington cigarette business than other place, than Oregon.
President Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mazin.
Yes.
Two items. Number one, this is cigarette consumption, and one of the things that we learned when we tour tobacco warehouses is that there are other tobacco products, including Roll Your Own, are the volume of those products are up very significantly. So my question, without actually looking at the overall cigarette equivalency, and they have to report, part of their reports are on cigarette equivalency. Second issue that I've got is that I'm wondering what a truly low state looks like in per capita consumption. For instance, Idaho at, 28 cents or something like that. It would be very interesting to see Idaho graphed on a per capita consumption side by side with Oregon and Washington. It would also be interesting to see what a no-tax state, I say no-tax, 2 cents from Kentucky or somewhere like that would be per capita. Maybe we could bring some rednecks in and they could tell us how much they smoke.
I think some smokers, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler would take an exception to your the presentation of smokers. However, the other tobacco is an important segment of tobacco taxes. If you allow me a couple more slides down the line, I'll go into more details with that.
Mr. Chair, just follow up.
And this is Senator Butler.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This isn't really a question towards Mazin. I'm wondering, with a doubling of, or proposed doubling of the tax per cigarette in the state of Oregon, with only a 50% commensurate increase from 65% to 95% cost on the OTP, my concern would be that we could be forcing folks into OTP, which is really a poor man's cigarette. Roll your own. We see the Marlboro man that was able to roll his own until he lost a lung or something like that. Anyway, the roll your own don't have the benefits of many of the other kinds of things. It's probably much more dangerous type of consumption. And, that's a concern to me that when we're talking about 100% increase on the cigarettes, which with filters and those kinds of things is a different issue than the roll your own. And I this isn't a health committee, but I just wanted to bring that up.
Well, thank you. And I think it's important for us to note that one of the arguments in favor of an increase in tobacco or cigarette taxes, tobacco taxes specifically, is that will reduce consumption. And I think it's reasonable for us to examine whether that's really true or not. I'd expect, without having actually seen them, that there are epidemiological studies out there that actually show the correlations between tobacco taxes and consumption and tobacco tax increases and consumption. And I wonder if we might find some of those and see what they suggest to us.
And Mr. Chair,
because that is one of the arguments in favor of raising tobacco taxes, is that it actually does reduce consumption.
The concern that I would have, again, is that in addition to Roll Your Own, there are other tobacco products out there, smokeless tobacco and wet tobacco and those other kinds of things, which are, you have some there representing, I thought they represent groom.
No, let's get my pack out.
Okay, yeah. Making a contribution to the OTP. But the other issues, of course, are smokeless tobacco and then the potential true damage that it can do to health.
Thank you, Representative Butler.
Representative Butler, I think I'll put some of the consumption per capita of the low states and probably share it with the committee, Mr. Chair, at later time, if you'd like to, just to see a comparison of what.
Thank you. And, you know, even though this isn't a health committee, it might be useful to contact the state epidemiologist who I suspect has directly available studies on this issue. I'd be amazed if he doesn't have that.
I've seen some, Mr. Chair, and of course I have to put up
a plug here for our profession. Economists are very...
He's going to put a plug in for tobacco. I couldn't pass that one out.
We are very eager to always explore the relationship between price and consumption of any good or bad. So the elasticity thing is kind of our thing, Mr. Chair, and I'll get into it in a few minutes.
Almost as exciting as intersecting lines.
Oh.
That's right. This is the guy that loves the intersecting lines.
It's the profession, Mr. Chair. It's not me.
I thought he was a recovering economist all his time.
Okay. Now, if we look at this point, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Brun.
Oh, yeah, just a quick comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that request for information is very important because I think this committee is, in effect, going to become the Health Committee Part 2, if I understand the progression of the Governor's Healthy Kids proposal. So,
Representative Brun, I think believe that's correct. This issue, of course, may be looked at in the Health Committee, and if it is, perhaps we can piggyback on that information. But if it isn't, I think it would be very reasonable for us to inquire about that, because that is part of the policy issues of whether or not to increase tobacco taxes.
I'll put something together, Mr. Chair. Now, if we're looking at this point, this is the greatest point,
yeah,
or the time when a large number of people smoked. This is 1978. This was the peak of smoking time. After that year, everything started going down. We smoked in Oregon about 155 packs per person per year in 1978. Now remember, not everybody, even with adults that smoked a lot, not everybody smoked. So if you're talking about 33% at that time, you're talking about 1.2 packs per day per smoker at that time. Now today we're talking about 54 packs per person. That filters down to about 0.15 packs per person or 0.75 packs at the smoking rate of 22% of our population. So every smoker today is contributing almost a pack a day for the state revenue taxes, if you will, on smoking. Now that's a large drop. That drop from that point to here is about 66%. 66% drop, 55 in total volume, of course, because there is population growth, so it picks up. So you don't have 66% in volume, you have 55% in volume. So if the same people, if there was no population changes, if the same people that exist today smoked what all the volume is today and the few years ago, instead of the 155 packs that we used to smoke, they would be smoking 76 packs. So that's where the population effect works. Is this as exciting to you as it is to me? tax distributions. This is where you have the amounts of tax, and those are tax cigarettes. Remember, we're always talking about tax cigarettes. Some of it that is not taxed in the black market or otherwise are not in these numbers. And again, you see the flattening of the line here, population going up. Now, the price per pack is, this includes both taxes and the raw price, if you will. You could see how it departs from
the general increase in prices in the CPI in about 1983. Okay, this is when the CPI goes here and cigarette prices just keep going up exponentially in that fashion. Now that also adds to what we look at, the elasticity and the reduction of smoking that we look to.
Representative Berger.
This is pre-tax price.
No, Representative Berger, this is total price. So this
total
is
price.
Includes raw price and tax.
And is that Oregon derived or nationally?
This would be this is Oregon.
Okay.
I'll show you a comparison between Oregon, the nation, and Washington. That's, and you would see, if you recall the chart that we looked at in the consumption per capita a few slides ago, you would see that Washington was always lower than Oregon in consumption. And you could see it here that Washington is always higher than Oregon in price. Not always been, at least. And so is the highest level of consumption that we saw in Oregon. It does make sense if you look at the price of Oregon being the lowest. So, in order to examine several levels. This is what we looked at before. Price increases hypothetically, we have in our models that we've looked at during the time. If you increase price by about 10%, you expect more or less about 6% reduction in consumption. So if this was the forecast and you increased it by a certain level, that's where you would, that the green line would be where your increased price, and that's the elasticity of price as we look at it. Now, if you look at the Washington effect, our neighbor to the north, when they have their prices increased, you would have expected for each 10% they increase their prices, our consumption is to increase by about 2%. So we're looking at this blue line here to be this guy, to be our consumption if there nothing else, everything else held the same, and they increased their prices again.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In terms of the population that is price sensitive, is there, can we generalize? Is there any kind of demographics that are common to that group that find the price elastic?
Mr. Chair, President Wood, the.
Get out of your specialty.
The price works in obviously all groups. Right? Mm-hmm. However, it works on some groups more than others, especially with smoking and the young or the youth. Youth doesn't have too much disposable income, so when they have to give away a lot of their disposable income into price of something that they have to continue buying, they have the tendency to buy less of it. So that the younger population that is affluent, or the less regular income that they would have, they would see more elasticity of price. And that's why you have the effect of price increases on the population. The more you go down the line in future years, the more reduction in consumption you would find. And that explains the secular trend of going down for a very long time, because you saw how that the prices kept escalating with time. And that basically just pushed down the relationship, in addition to the health type of messages and so on. And you have the secular decline that has been since 1978.
Thank you. Senator Gelser?
I had a question and a follow-up, if that's okay. Thank you. So do we have significant numbers of high school and college students driving over the border from Washington so that Oregon can sell young people cigarettes at a lower cost?
Mr. Chair, Representatives, I think what we have is not only young, and I mean, when I'm talking young, I'm not saying below 18 necessarily, or anybody would be able to know that. But with Washington, there was a certain level of, there was two things in effect in Washington. There is the price effect, and there is the restriction effect. They have passed legislation in Washington where they even can't smoke in bars and restaurants and so on. Now, what that have done, it seems, has given a boost to businesses that have smoking, drinking, a lottery on Jensen Beach kind of thing. And we seem to have witnessed that effect. So, in that sense, we gained consumption that they have lost. I don't know if that answers what you were looking for.
It does, and I guess the follow-up is more of a comment. I hadn't really thought before of that long-term impact of a higher tax reducing lifelong smoking by young people when we have the opportunity to change their habits, and that cost to the state over time of having lifelong smokers as opposed to being able to use a tobacco tax as a tool to reduce smoking among younger populations is very interesting and helpful information to me, so I thank you for pulling that out.
You're making precisely the argument that the health advocates make for raising tobacco taxes. If you can get people to stop smoking because the price has gone up, that's useful. And if you can prevent youngsters from beginning smoking, they never become smokers, and that's useful.
Yes, and I think that it also, I know that children under the age of 18 are not supposed to smoke. I recognize that they do, and people do go in, and young people do buy cigarettes, and it makes me uncomfortable that we could be creating a situation in Oregon and in the Portland area where we are the attractive place for young people, underage people, to come and purchase cigarettes.
Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I think that the graph there on that downturn slightly just in about 2003, Mazin, and right there, and then the rebound, does that have to do with Measure 30 in part, the elasticity when the price goes up or the price goes down because of the tobacco tax? And then there was a difference in Washington's tax about that same time. Washington adds its tax. So some of that V that you see there may well be have something to do with elasticity. The balance of it probably has to do with the Washington purchase issue as a result of the price difference, the tax differential.
Mr. Chair, that is a correct observation. Now, having had this discussion that just happened a few minutes ago, I would not be a good economist if I didn't say, on the other hand, on the other hand, you increase prices high enough, and what happens is you open a different level of markets. You open black markets, and you make it more... Okay, so I just had to say that. So you want to think that we stop saying these things. Now, finally, if we put these two effects that we've talked about before, the Washington effect and the price increase together, you get the black line here, and that's what you would have a higher lower, if you will, than you would have had otherwise. Okay.
tax distribution again. Let's talk about bans. If you ban them, we think that you would go down. Now, what it bans? If you replicate the same level of restriction on smoking in bars and restaurants that Washington has, what you have done eventually is elevated any advantage that Oregon bars and restaurants have had in attracting business. So if you level the playing field, that's what I think you would be at. Now, if you have the tax increase and bans and you combine them, that's where the consumption would go further, at least at this point that we're looking at. Of course, knowing that we've been talking about all this time, just think how many lines I have to pick from to give you an impact of what the tax increase would be. So that's what we are facing at this time.
Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I think this is an interesting snapshot, but I can think of 1,000 variables in here, and I know Mazin hasn't even talked. He mentioned one, buying cigarettes elsewhere. You do something to price, and in Washington, of course, they have an Indian tribe availability. And also, we talked about bars, but as an ex-smoker, I can guarantee you there are plenty of people running across the river going to Costco buying tons of cigarettes and taking them back over to Washington, distributing them throughout their smoking families. It isn't just bars. When you get your price too high, lots of behavior changes are, you know, going to be expected, and I can guarantee you that's happening right now.
Thank you.
Now I this just to indicate that we move from one subject to the next. Other tobacco products. Those would include cigars, stogies,
roll-ups.
I was asking what a stogie was.
That's the thing you would find in the mouth or under the nose of Winston Churchill.
Thank you.
In the pictures.
He only smokes a stogie, never a cigar. Did you notice that?
I think it's a really big cigar.
Now, that also roll-up things, and I, when Representative Butler was talking about the roll-up, I was just thinking about roll your own. chewing tobacco and other stuff. However, it's mostly cigars. But, you know, I don't know about you, but there has been a new phenomenon with tobacco. The hookah bars that has been popping up everywhere. Everybody's familiar with it. You know, part of the fruit-flavored tobacco. One of the dangers of this job is that I have to go and do my own...
You told us you would keep us awake. You've been successful.
Mr. Chair, I don't see that in there.
I don't know who put this. However, remember the tax on cigars is capped, was capped in 2002 to 50 cents per cigar. Now, remember the other tobacco tax is 65% of wholesale price. So if tax on cigar is kept at or capped at 50 cents per cigar, that means it's a 90 cents wholesale price that you basically tax at. Thank you. The 506 OTP revenue is $31.2 million. This is a significant change from the past.
And OTP revenue does not have too much division in revenue. Basically, health plan, tobacco use reduction account, and general fund. This just basically an issue of administration of tobacco enforcement. That is not always happening in statutes. You won't find this in the past so prominent as it is today. But the $31.2 million is a great jump from what it used to be, and many of it we saw as a product or an outcome of the enforcement that has happened in the last 2 years or so. So total tobacco revenue, we put both cigarettes and OTP together. That's the picture you would end up with during the time. And you can see how the general fund is going down, and the health plan is taking a bigger and bigger share of it, and how where the locals are more or less about the same, but losing a little bit on it. Transit and local is what we shown before.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mazen, I'm looking back at the tobacco tax rate, and I recognize that the largest share of what we collect here is cigarette tax. I'm looking back at the second slide, which talks about the cigarette tax rate starting in 67, and then it had very small increases through 94, and then some real substantial increase in 97 and 2002 and down in 2004. It's kind of what this slide shows in part, but I'm anxious about what the peak is, again, in about 1999 there, and why it is that the tax rate, you'd think that with the tax rate going up, that there would be more elasticity. In other words, those two graphs, if you graphed out that page 2 chart in comparison to this chart, you'd find they're really very much similar. Probably the downward trend is 2003 through 2006, where there was a real spike in the overall tobacco tax there as an increase, in terms of increase.
That's, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I think the observation is accurate. With the increase that happened with right about here, you started looking at escalation, and then consumption starts adjusting, and it started going down. In this time frame, it's when Measure 20 comes in. The amount of revenue starts going up. Now remember, you have to have higher and higher tax rates to get more or the same or more money of the reducing or declining volumes. So while volumes are declining, you're escalating the tax rate. At this point here, where you lose the 10 cents, and it comes down a little bit, and then you have the Washington effect, and it starts picking up again. You could almost tell the story with the revenue that is being coming in. That's big stuff.
And we may have passed this quickly, and I missed it. What percentage of the total comes from other tobacco products?
Other tobacco products, Mr. Chair, are about 15%.
Thank you.
You have about 30 million out of 200 and some million per year. So the Master Settlement Agreement, Master Settlement Agreement is basically summarized that 47 states sued for tobacco manufacturers in 1998. They got the Master Settlement Agreement. You have the four original participating, and they corner about 96% of the market. You have later other subsequent participating and non-participating. Then there was an agreement of an annual payment in perpetuity. That means never ends, subject to adjustments. Those adjustments a function of market share and enforcement. In other words, there is an agreement of enforcing compliance. So the non-participating will not have an advantage over the participating and therefore start capturing market share. That will come to play at that time. The estimated payments were at initial payments of 8 billion. Oregon's share was 257, excuse me, and then going down to 81 and picking up with a formula to stabilize about $90 million a year or so. In here with the $19 million, the strategic payment. Now, payments as we have seen them, we have in a one-time received this total of $338 million.
Excuse me just a moment. Just to inquire from the committee, does everyone know the settlement that he's talking about? Okay. All right. We spent quite a bit of time on this in the committee when I was on it 4 years ago, the details may not be very important, but you have to know that it's an alternate source of revenue that's not directly related to any taxes. Go ahead, let's see.
So these payments that the tobacco companies make, we had until the 2003, that's not included in the OCO5 biennium, we got $338 million and $9.3 million in interest and investment. And those were spent as $211 million in the Oregon Health Plan, or OMAP, which is what preceded the health plan, and general fund, insurance, health balance, and so on, at $125 million. You end up with 10.2 at the beginning of the 03 or 05 biennium. And the amounts kept coming in, and of course, you remember the Oregon appropriation bonds that came out of the special session in 2002, where we had these payments, about $41 million a year, to go on the master settlement agreement receipts. The new thing about the MSA payments is the determination at a certain time, it was about a year ago, by the companies that are participating, that states have not been enforcing their part of the bargain, and therefore they were reducing payments to many. And I think our reduction in payment would have been 05, 07 at $17 million. And then to continue be reduced at 14.5. Now, the Attorney General is taking measures and basically taking these to arbitration and court, contending that we have done our share as a state, and therefore we need not see these reductions. Those reductions are put in an escrow account at this time. In case things are fixed, then we will get back those payments. However, at this point, budgets, I think, are being crafted with those reductions in mind. Okay? Done. Done with smoking. It's great now. Alcoholic beverages, we'll talk about beer, cider, malt beverages, wine, and distilled spirits. Beer taxes. Beer tax rates. We have seen tax rate increases in four times in the state. In 1933, we introduced $1 per barrel. That's 3.22 cents per gallon. And in 35, it became $1.30, $1.95 here, and then $2.60 in 77, and it has not changed since. Now, $2.60 per barrel is about 8.3871 cents per gallon. Now, what does that mean, actually? A gallon is about 128 fluid ounces, which makes a six-pack of beer taxed at 4.7 cents. Okay? A 12-ounce bottle, of course, is more. There are those big... Now, suppose that you sip at the rate of an ounce and a half every time you take a gulp of beer, then you'll be paying about 0.0982, or about a cent, or 10% of a cent, or a mil, for each sip of beer.
Is that good information?
In the discussion of trivia next time in your cocktail, that's...
Take me a whole church meeting to go through a bottle.
1 mil per sip. You can't get more simpler than this. So, having developed that knowledge, we'll go and look at the dollars per gallon. What you would think Oregon is as of January 1st, 2006. About number 48. Now, this is only the excise tax. If you put both excise and sales, and remember many states tax the product on both ways, if you put them together, you would have Oregon, not 50, 51. And that because we consider the District of Columbia as a taxing entity, so that makes them a 51. Well, 506 beer taxes, about $7.0 million. And they are distributed according to this pie chart, 50% to mental health, the general fund 28%, city 17%, counties 5%. Now, if you, by the way, if you also look at the different beer tax rates in what's so-called the smaller segments, there are two smaller segments that we might look at when Oregon is concerned. The non-taxing, or the no-sales tax states, and the beer-producing states. When we talk about the beer-producing states, Oregon and Colorado would be about the same when it's the excise tax. However, when you add both types of taxes, excise and sales tax, Oregon is always at the bottom, regardless of which universe you...
And this graph shows nominal dollars?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So and its real effect is a long-term decline in purchasing power of the tax. Because of the continued decline in the value of the dollar over time.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. The same dollar that you collected in 1990 does not buy the same good or the same amount of goods in 2006.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Butler.
Mazin, I'd like to know, you've given us some excellent information about where we're at today in relationship to the beer tax rates. I'd like to know, when we increased beer taxes in 1977, where Oregon was in relationship to the 51 taxing entities, and the same with 75 or 35. You know, where did we fall on the chart when we were making those decisions back in those days? Were we in the middle? Those kinds of things. So we'll have some idea under what condition the legislature made or took those actions to increase those taxes.
I'll look into that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Now, just because I gave you the number of packs that we smoke per year, we will not let beer not be treated the same. In 1987. Let's do 1990. In 1990, we consumed 23.67 beer gallons per capita, or that's 42 six-packs per person.
per year. In 2006, that by the way kept going down, and then starts picking up. And as you see here, we're almost back to our good drinking selves.
I just want to point out that there are people in the back of the room who volunteered to have done their part in that.
You know, at 41.256 packs per year in 2006, I'm sure some of them did. Well, not immediately before the
right.
That turns to about 4.75 bottles per week. And considering that 1 week, that's like one beer per weekday, if you don't drink on the weekend. But that's per person. And people don't drink, I mean, the little children who don't necessarily drink all the time.
we hope not. Just on special occasion.
Well, yes. That wasn't a good choice. They don't drink. So the parents drink for them. I mean, or they drink their share. So we end up with about four beers a day per weekday per person per drinker in a household of four people with one drinker in that household. So if you are not done with your four beers tonight, you would feel guilty about it.
Hold up your shirt. Hold up your shirt.
All right, blind tax rates. We have gone through a number of increases in wine taxes. As you could see, what we call dessert wine or port was not taxed at the beginning, taxed here, and then not taxed or increased in 44 and 49. Came back in 47. Today, we're at 67 cents, and that... After 1977, when we did the beer, we did the wine again in 83, so we had 67 per gallon of wine and 77 per gallon for dessert wine. That translates, if you are looking at a bottle of wine, just to make it real, bottle of wine is about 750 milliliters, or 3/4 of a liter. And it's about 13.27 cents per bottle for regular wine and 15.25 cents per dessert, per bottle of dessert wine. 13.27 per bottle is a bargain. State wine tax rates. Those for, just to put Oregon on the map, we're about number 24. We're just right in the middle as excise taxes. If we put both excise and sales taxes together, in order to make that comparison relevant, we're looking at about 47.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. Madison, are there any states that are taxing based upon alcohol sold as opposed to just brute gallons of wine? In other words, we're looking at alcohol containing something less than 14%, maybe 11%, all the way up to 21%. And then, of course, we know that some hard liquors go way, way high in their alcoholic content. Does any state tax based upon... It looks to me like the cost to society should probably be discussed in terms of alcohol consumed, not just liquid consumed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, there are different ways of taxation when it comes to wine. Liquor, of course, is a different ballgame.
Certainly.
However, wine and what is taxed under what scheme... There's about three or four different schemes in the United States. I have a table that shows the different states doing what, and if you'd like, I could bring that to you.
I guess I'm just anxious, Mr. Chair. I'd like to explore just a little bit different method of going about that as we talk about the alcohol content in beer and wines and dessert wines, and then when we get into the hard liquors, to make certain that certainly with regard to the wine and the hard liquors, that we are comparing the amount of alcohol that's consumed. I think that's where the damage occurs, is, and the cost to society in that regard.
Just a quick look at 0506 wine tax 7. Remember, beer was at 222. This guy's 777. Now, that's. You would think it should be in Washington State or something. And it's mostly mental health, general fund, city, county, and the wine board gets a small amount. If you look at it, the Bordeaux, no pun intended here, the Bordeaux is the table wine, and the dessert wine is the dessertish type color. What is this color? There are some people who are good with colors. They know the names of colors. I have about 20 names, and that's it. The rest of them are, this has a name.
May I suggest that the magenta for the lower large and lilac for the upper part.
Thank you, Representative.
Mazin will accept that.
Oh. I was hoping Bordeaux just to make the table wine kind of. But I guess it has to work. But as you could see, is been going up, and that's after a long time of coming down. But remember, here is when we started again increasing the tax rate, and it started going up, but we also start picking up on what we're thinking. So if you before we leave this, if you will, just to give you an idea, in back in 1987 we drank about 3.2 gallons per capita of wine, and it started going down in 1990. It was down to 2.64, 95, 2.23, 2000, 2.57. Now in 2003, started picking up. 2006, it's about 3.15. We're almost back to the level of drinking that we used to. It's about time we start picking up those drinks, right? I guess.
Well, I don't know if there's a direct connection, but of course the period from the trough to now is the period during the greatest growth in Oregon wine production. Our first vintages of any size were in the very late 80s. So that may be a connection also.
But as you would see, Mr. Chair, from all the smoking and in the OLCC, in the hard liquor, that is also the case, that we're going from 0.62 case per year per person. That's about 7.5 bottles. About 30 bottles. And that changes basically the state motto to come to Oregon, smoke, drink, play lottery, and have fun. And we will tax all of it. OLCC liquor markup. The markup is set by the commission, the OLCC commission. And it's given that ability by ORS 471.745. Officially, it's set at 106%, but it has not changed for years. But it could go up and down. And why is it going up and down? Because of the amount of refunds, costs of goods and so on. So this allows it a little bit of fluctuation, but it's above about 100% markup so far. This is a quick look at where we are when it comes to, this is our population. These are the cases of hard liquor, and you would see how it bottomed out down here in 93, 94, and then started picking back up again. And this is the amount of sales. That's also a response to the different markup amounts.
Yeah, and of course we don't charge a tax on hard liquor being sold at OLCC. We instead charge a markup as the merchant.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
So as I said, we at this time at about $7.50 a bottle per person. So if you're back to the analogy of a four people in a family, that's about 30 bottles per year. So if I have a family of four, it's my family of four, by the pyramids in Egypt, are these people drinking my liquor?
I hope not.
Okay. Well, now a thought of Egypt at this time is, sunny, 95 degrees. Think about it. Oh, well, we have to be here, right? 344.7 million total revenue of OLCC. That includes both liquor and wine and privilege tax and beer. So your net sale is about sales 33%. Your cost of goods is almost half. This is with the beer and wine, 1% license, and operating expenditures of 14%.
And that includes all of the costs of the operating the liquor stores, our warehouse, administration, and everything.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So the distribution formula for privilege tax, just to have it quickly in the back, 2 cents of wine tax goes to the wine board, and this was a 1984 decision. And balance of that, the wine and tax goes 50% mental health, and 50% goes to the OLCC account, and then that brings in the other OLCC revenue, and it divides all what so-called OLCC account into 56% general fund, 10% counties, 20% cities by population, and 14% to cities by formula to substitute the loss that the cities would have gotten from the formula that they had before. So that's the 1977 formula that the cities get. Okay. Total OLCC revenue distribution, you end up with 139.7 million. Now, remember, although there's a lot of excitement in this field of taxation and so on, 139 million after all what I've been talking about. Remember the lottery, we had this cash machine voice, sound effects. It was easy. It was 1.3 billion. It was easy to feel like there is a cash machine behind it. But all what we've been talking about, 139.7 million.
One tenth of the lottery.
Right. And historically, however, if you look at it, it is growing.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. That growth line looked an awful lot like our population growth line. Maybe a little steeper?
A little steeper.
Okay. All right.
A little steeper. We are drinking more per capita. So that consumption per capita is going up. And Now, when I say drinking more, this is a per capita. This is, a statistic, which means we might not be drinking more at all. What could be happening is we're just having or becoming more of a touristic place. And, you know, visitors come and visitors drink and visitors do things. So as more of a tourism industry that we're developing, we're selling more beer, more wine, and more liquor. So don't feel bad if you haven't been contributing your share or fair share of drinking, because somebody will. This is the only appropriate thing that I found for 911 emergency access, like somebody's falling or something. So, it doesn't work. I wanted a siren, an emergency siren, but didn't find that. Sorry.
We can make the sound effects for you if you need.
We'll work on that. In 81, we had this at 3%. Of access charge, that's on phones, 5%, that was temporary in 91. In 95, it was made to be 75% per month per circuit. Now that means both landline and cell phone. And accordingly, when we did that, you could see the explosion of the cell phone and how it brought all these amounts of revenue. We had about $36 million per year. And you know, these revenues are dedicated to the different 911
PSAPs. Primary PSAPs, yeah.
This is not going to the general fund. It goes into dedicated funds for particular purposes.
That's correct. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, we'll go quickly, not by much, to different taxation, which is fuel taxes, and basically transportation taxes. But fuel taxes in general, on gasoline, they're important because they're also dedicated to transportation programs, or what's so-called the highway funds. But fuel taxes on any fuel that is used on the propulsion of motor vehicle, that's how that the Constitution defines it. And it is at 24 cents. And then there is a tax on the propulsion of an aircraft at 9 cents when it's what's so-called avgas, and jet fuel at 1 cent per gallon. Diesel, CNG, which is compressed natural gas, and etc., other types of fuels used to propel a motor vehicle are also 24 cents. Now, with the exception, diesel is not taxed when it is used in vehicles that pay the weight mile tax. Or vehicles that are 26,000 pounds and heavier do not pay the weight mile tax. They pay weight mile tax, do not pay diesel tax. The flat fees and road use assessment fees are also part of that formula. Motor vehicle fuel tax rates, this is just to give you an idea of what it is. And this time, if I'm sure some people remember that this was called a 2 plus 2 plus 2 plus 2, which was 2 cents per year to invest. It was a big investment into transportation programs at that time. Transportation taxes stayed till 7 cents. By the way, here's a piece of trivia also that you could discuss the next party, cocktail party. Oregon.
I'm anticipating.
You can't wait.
I can't wait.
Who was the first state to levy a gas tax? It was Oregon. Okay. Which year was? 1919. That's and also it was the first state to institute a highway fund, which is a dedication of transportation taxes. But it stayed very low tax, started at one penny, and stayed
until about 7 cents until from 1968 to 1982, when it went 1 penny up. Now, if you look at those, of course, in real terms, they were just basically treading inflation. So fuel tax revenue, if you look at them, in 1971, when it was, 7 cents, it was $72.7 million. Today, with the onset of the 2 plus 2 plus 2 plus 2 that we mentioned just minutes ago, you see how the escalation in fuel tax happened. And then, at a certain time, it started flattening out after the last increase in 1993. Now, here, you know, it is usually a difference between what people like to believe about what they do and what actually happens. Let's say when the conservation of energy and the hybrid and so on into the fleet, we're thinking that we're conserving more and not spending as much. But actually, we in the last 2 years, we have been consuming more fuel than we have been in the past. Weight mile taxes, as remember, the 26 to 80,000 pounds. Weight mile taxes are taxes that are done or graduated by weight. And those are per mile. So you would find, you will not find these per dollars, of course. You would find them by mills, again, in the tax tables. Table B is what we call after 80,000 pounds. Once the trucks start getting heavy after 80,000 pounds, they start adding what's a different number of axles into their configuration. And that number of axles elevates, if you will, the damage that the heavyweights put on the pavement. You start at a table B, which is a whole different table that gives incentives for adding more axles and reducing the damage to the pavements. There's also what's so-called in lieu taxes, in lieu of weight mile taxes. You could pay flat fees if you are a trucker or a trucking a haul of log, sand, gravel, and chip trucks. And those will offer these in lieu of flat fees, which is not by mile but by period of time, because they're seasonal and because it is a lot more convenient and easy for them and for small operators, and there are very small number of them. Now, road use assessment fees are fees for trucks that are above 105.5 and cannot divide, or what's so-called indivisible loads. They cannot divide these loads into 105,000 pounds chunks. Weight mile tax tables usually look like that. This is the B table, or table B. This is when you start adding axles. If you have six axles, your rate goes down. So this is, in a way, an incentive. Once the more axles you add, the lower tax rate that you pay cents per mile. Flat fees, those we've talked about. Just want to put them in front of you to see how they are. Product use assessment fee is 5 cents per easel mile. Easel is, of course, has a definition. Representative Butler, would you like to try the easel?
Equivalent single axle load.
All right. And this was defined by ASHTO, American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials, in their 1962 conference. Still applies.
We can tell that at least one member of the committee does do acronyms.
Mr. Chair, one thing about the weight mile tax that is worth, or always worth remembering, Because although they started going up with the time we increased, remember, every time there is an increase in the gas tax, there needs to be an equivalent increase in the weight mile tax to maintain the relationship between light and heavy. However,
and that's required in the Constitution, isn't it?
That is correct, Mr.
Yes, thank you.
And in about a month or so, we will bring you what the Constitution requires as the highway cost allocation study, and it will be presented to you also. In weight mile tax is about trucking. And, of course, trucking and transportation, moving goods around, is very sensitive and elastic with economic conditions. You look at the time of 2001, this is when the recession started, and you would see that the trucking industry, or moving transportation, moving of goods, have preceded and came first as we go with this recession, and then it started recovering back again. So that's how obvious it is of its sensitivity to economic conditions. Done with transportation taxes. If anybody know everything you need to know about transportation taxes, of course there will be probably a time when we have a transportation tax presentation all on its own. Is one of my favorite subjects. Transient lodging tax. 2003 session, House Bill 2267 established the hotel motel tax, what we call, and it's basically 1% of tax on the hospitality, basically, on renting hotel motel, campgrounds, so on, and it dedicates that 1% to the tourism industry. However, the Department of Revenue collects and administers, and it gets 2% for its costs before it sends it to the Tourism Commission. And it funds state tourism marketing. The lodging providers who collect, they act as agents, basically, of the state, so they get to keep about 5% of their collections. We allow this in the law. Starting January 1st, 2004, and it has to be paid quarterly. Now, at that time, when we started the, we estimated the tax to be about $16.46 million for the 2003-2005 biennium, 20 in 05-07, 22-05-07-09. First year was 2004, and the actuals were a little weak, about 1.5 million. Fiscal year 2005, however, came at 8.4 million. Fiscal year 2006 is about 9.24 million. So, in essence, we think it's a reasonable thing when you have local taxes. Remember, the lodging tax or hotel tax was a very popular tax with local governments. That was a good source of revenue. And there is a lot of it in different localities. If you take all the average in the state, it's about 7.7%. And that 7.7% produces about $77 million. So that's about, what, $10 million per percent. So if the state is living 1% on supposedly a bigger base, we expect next biennium to be about 20 million, 20 some million.
Thank you. Any questions about any part of the presentation today?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Just one brief observation with regard to the transient lodging tax. Last session, you may recall that we actually expanded the transient lodging tax to include vacation rentals and those kinds of things, mobile home, I shouldn't say mobile home, but RV courts and those kinds of things. I at some point, it would probably be appropriate for the Department or for the Legislative Revenue Office to at least inquire of the Department of Revenue as to what actually is happening with regard to the enforcement and administration of truly the collection activity that's going on. I just actually Representative Witt comes from the district where there's probably a lot of overnight parking that's charged, but that may slip by us because we just added that last session, and it probably is not super enforced at this time.
Yeah. Perhaps we could have a distribution of the answer rather than a hearing on that. That's a great idea, though, Representative Butler. Thank you. Thank you very much. It was a very scintillating and enlightening presentation today.
Almost dragged in a drink, wouldn't I?
I've managed to avoid that during committee hearing so far. Tomorrow, we will have another scintillating conversation. We meet with the House Energy and Environment Committee to talk about alternate fuels issues. The reason we're meeting with them is because they are considering the bill as it relates to environmental and sustainability issues. And they will later come to us if in fact they pass it out, will come to us for review of the tax issues. So the plan at this point is that we will probably not hold a separate public hearing on the bill after that hearing, although we, of course, may consider additional testimony during work session. So plan to be here tomorrow, prepared to ask questions about any issues that are pertain to that bill, and we look forward to a very interesting meeting. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.